Hey Headlampers, welcome to the Headlamp Hour. I'm your host, Nate Jukes, and on this episode of the Headlamp Hour, we talk with Patrick Oborn and Mike Greer, who just competed in Sudden Death December. What is Sudden Death December, you ask? Well, it is an individual backyard ultra of sorts, last one standing style, and it actually starts with No Rest November, where you run at least 10K per day every day in November. Then starting December 1st, you run 11K. And on December 2nd, you run 12K and you add 1K per day every day until you can't go any longer. So listen to my conversation with Patrick Oborn and Mike Greer to find out their experience with this challenge and how far they made it and their fun experiences along the way. Patrick lives in Pleasant Grove, Utah. Mike lives in Phoenix, Arizona, and was actually the guy who crewed me recently to my ninth place finish at Black Canyon 100K. So it was a lot of fun to catch up with Mike and also meet Patrick, who is also an amazing individual. So I hope you enjoy the conversation with Patrick Oborn and Mike Greer. All right, Mike Greer and Patrick Oborn, welcome to the Headlamp Hour. How are you guys doing?
Great, man. Thanks for having us, Nate.
Doing well. Moving and grooving. Moving and grooving.
Good. Well, I am super excited for this conversation. So it's been a while in the works here, trying to get all of our schedules to align, and I'm glad we finally got them to align and glad we're having this conversation tonight. So I know Mike, I know you from, probably in the last 6-7 months I've met you, but I feel like I know you really well, because you and your boys, two teenage boys, crewed me at Black Canyon just a little over a month ago, or just about a month ago. Not only that, you and your family, Kelly, your wife, and your whole family hosted my whole family at your house down there in Phoenix for the whole weekend. And it was an amazing experience to be there. It was so much like more comfortable than even like an Airbnb, I feel like, for us at least, maybe not for you guys, because we were crammed in your house. But you know, you guys made us meals and just gave us the five-star treatment. So thank you so much again, just to you and your wife and your children, for making those sacrifices, for making that weekend just super extra special.
It was the best thing to happen to us all year, and it's been a whirlwind ever since. So come on back, we need you back.
Wow, I didn't expect that it was the best thing that's happened this year, but I guess the year just started, so hopefully there's hope for for better things to come. But and Patrick, I do not know you personally, but I feel like I've gotten to know you over the past little bit as I've followed your journey, what we're going to talk about today, your Sudden Death December, yours and Mike's efforts there. And I've only heard good things about you from Mike and from others. So I'm super excited to get to know you better too.
No, thanks for having me, Nate. Look forward to the talk, and very, very jealous of not being invited to Hotel Greer yet. So I'm looking forward to maybe punching that card on my way to Cocodona, maybe.
A little prayer meal or something. The door is always open. You know that. Come on.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. 5 out of 5 stars. Highly recommend the Greer Hotel. Baby.
Come on down. Any and all. Come on down.
All right. So, Mike, you live in Phoenix currently, and Patrick, you're in Pleasant Grove, Utah, is my understanding. But I wanted to ask you, and maybe we'll start with you, Patrick. Where did you grow up, and what about that location or environment, whether it was, the place itself or your parents, siblings, friends, et cetera, helped you grow into the person and the runner that you are today?
That is a great question. So, I grew up in Los Angeles, ironically enough, born and raised. My parents, when I was born, were actually, my dad was going to school to be a physical therapist at the LA Primary Children's Hospital physical therapy program. My mom had just graduated, so they were kind of just staggered, but in the same career. So growing up in LA was awesome. When I was 3, we moved to a suburb called Diamond Bar. And the suburb was very, I don't know, utopian, man. It was the suburbs. It was a little bit away from LA, so we were kind of away from all the, some of the chaos and stuff of LA. But it was just a very, I'll call it sheltered. We didn't see a lot of bad stuff. We grew up with good families around us, good kids. We spent all summer long outdoors. We cruised around, just had a good time. And it was great. And in my family is a sports family. Running is we didn't consider running a sport, and some of them still don't, unfortunately. They say anything that you have to do to play a sport isn't a sport. So anyways, so I grew up and I remember just going through football practice. I played football and baseball mostly. Now I'd see the cross country runners cruising around the track, cruising up and down the streets. And I was, I always just thought like runners were a peculiar bunch. I just thought that they were naturally gifted runners. They just had more lung capacity than the rest of us. And they were, I mean, I was 100 and, 70, 180 pounds back then. I still am, thankfully, but back then the runners were like a buck 20, a buck 30. And so they're kind of smaller guys, skinny guys. And I'm just like, God did never intended for me to run. He intended for me to run as fast as I could and catch a football. So that's what I focused on in my dream. I don't know if you can see, but here I'm in this office surrounded by game balls that my dad won when he played football at BYU. So I grew up and game balls were all over the place in their football. So I wanted to, please my dad. I wanted to follow in his footsteps. And so I tried to play football at BYU where I walked on my freshman year. So, that was really my first time away from California. So I moved away from home, to Utah to go to BYU. And play football. And unfortunately, it was kind of a lot like the Rudy story, just without the happy ending.
Dang it.
I got beat up and I tried hard my second year. I quit and focused on studies and everything else. And really my recollection of California was the mountains were something that you could see in the distance, but getting in a car and getting there was just not really plausible. So I grew up in the concrete jungle. It was all pavement. It was riding bikes, dirt bikes, maybe on some new construction houses, and surfing a lot. But again, running really never entered into the calculus until after college. My wife and I actually moved here into this house in Utah. And I was here like 5 milliseconds before someone invited me to come do a triathlon with them. And there's just a big here in Utah, like being outdoors and exercising, there's a big community. So it's really easy to get sucked in. But until then, man, in California, it was work, school, and honestly, maybe a pickup basketball game once in a while. And so I always joke, I'm like my 20s and 30s barely did anything. I was kind of overweight, not that healthy. And just moving here to Utah, I just got that little nudge to go do a sprint try. And Mike knows this kind of about me, but like the way my brain works, it's like it's an engineer, man. It's constantly got to be improving. Constantly just dialing it up and getting better all the time. And so that one little sprint triathlon turned into a faster sprint triathlon, which turned into an Olympic triathlon, which turned into a half Ironman in Oceanside, California. And that turned into an Ironman Coeur d'Alene, which turned into an Ironman Arizona out at Tempe Town Lake, eventually turned into a Wasatch 100, which is where I really started getting lost and confused and everything else. And every time I tried something new, my first time out, I was always a complete train wreck, disaster, made every mistake possible. My body, my feet, just if you could make a mistake, I've made it. But then after the pain wears off and I realize I'm not going to die from my injuries, the cycles, the motor starts to turn and I start to think, how could I do better than that? Like, what can I do different next time? And my wife's like, there's a next time. I'm like, there's going to be a next time. It's like having a kid after few weeks pass by, you're excited to have another kid again, but right after you're like, no more kids, like I'm done. And it's kind of the same thing with like triathlon and trail running and everything else. Like it always hurts. It's always a big effort. And then you're going to be sore for a minute, but then things heal and then your brain starts to process how can I get better? Like constant improvement is just something that is just kind of in my DNA, but I just never gave it a chance to work because I was just never working out. But things worked out and here I am today.
Awesome. So if I understood you correctly, it was kind of, you moved to Utah, you were kind of, you got married, or I mean, you were in college and then football didn't work out, unfortunately. Gotten to triathlons a little bit after you were married, and then Wasatch 100, was that your first trail race then?
Actually, I was trying to close an account because I'm in a technology sales company. And the biggest managed services provider who didn't use us here in Utah is called Les Olson Company. You'll see Les Olson Company, BYU Cougars, at the Utah Utes, at the Utah Jazz. They're a big company, and they're in and around a lot of IT. And so I wanted them to like ask questions about internet connectivity and stuff that they've never really done before. But to do that, you have to talk to Troy Olson, the grandson of Les Olson, who started the company. And it's a very tightly held family company. And so getting in there is kind of hard. I just wanted to have a conversation with them. And so finally I scheduled an appointment and I went and I sat in the waiting room for a minute. And the time for my appointment came and went, and people were coming and going. Finally, he came out and he's like, "I got 2 minutes. You want to come and just talk for a quick sec?" I'm like, "Okay, sure." I go into his office, and his office was full of trail running stuff. He had like trophies from Wasatch 100. Like there's like a special trophy you get if you do 10 of them. And then he had like Kachina Mosa, and he had Squaw Peak 50, just all these trophies. And I was like, "Tell me about those." He's like, "Oh yeah, you know, I kind of trail run and stuff." I'm like, "You've done 10 Wasatches?" And he's like, "Oh yeah." And I'm like, "Wow, that's incredible." I said, "You know, we don't have much time to talk business, but just out of curiosity, when's your next race?" He goes, "Oh, in a couple of weeks, I'm doing the Buffalo 50, the 50K out at Antelope Island." I'm
Oh
like,
yeah.
"Oh my gosh, the Buffalo 50K. I'm doing that too." He's like, "Oh, cool. We'll see you there." So we left the office and I hopped on my laptop and I signed up for the Buffalo 50K. And then sure enough, I saw him at the start line. I'm like, "Hey." He goes, "Oh, Patrick, right?" I'm like, "Yeah." He goes, "Hey, have a great race." And man, as soon as we started, he just disappeared off into the distance. And it was, I'm like, "Well, that was a totally useless ploy on my part. Like, never try to like recruit and talk to a guy who's faster than you because you're never going to see him."
Yeah, I thought you were going to say, and then instead of 2 minutes, we had a 5 hour.
Oh my gosh. No, dude, I showed up. I had running flats on, no Hokas. I was carrying a Gatorade bottle because I didn't know about all the bottles and stuff. I had no idea. Like I'd never done trail. I'd only had a bike where I have a bike thing and triathlon running, you have like an aid station every mile. Like they nurse you to the finish line. Like you don't have to carry stuff. Like, so the whole trail running thing, I was completely out of my league. But luckily for me, he hung out for a couple minutes because Dave Skaggs, the race director, he always has a little activity afterwards where everyone brings a can of like canned vegetables or camp, and everyone dumps them into a big pot of soup. So you never know what the soup's going to be. It depends on what everyone brings. So it's kind of like a suicide soup. Troy stayed around and ate some soup and was hanging out. And finally, about an hour later or something, I come, you know, plodding across, just feeling like totally trashed. And so I sit down and I'm like, "There's Troy Olson right next to me." I'm like, "Troy, what's up?" He goes, "Hey, you made it, man. Nice job." Like, "Yeah, it was pretty hard out there," because, you know, call my receptionist. Like, we actually need to talk shop, you know? So then I actually got an appointment with him and we talked for 30 minutes, and now our businesses do a lot of business together. But man, I always say I will run for food and I will run for an appointment to talk to a customer, right? So nothing is above sales, right, Mike?
I mean, I guess. That's your world. You're the
so
grand
honestly,
champ of it.
chasing Troy and trying to get an appointment with him was like my first ultra. That was my first 50K. Like I'd only done marathons and Ironmans and stuff. I'd never done an ultra. So it was pretty funny. Yeah.
Awesome. That's a great
chasing the dollar, man. All the way to an ultra.
Hey, whatever motivates you. Love it. All right, Mike, same question for you. Where did you grow up and what about the location or environment helped you grow into the person and runner you are today?
I grew up in a small town called Provo, Utah. And so sadly, you know, I grew up my whole life pretty much in the foothills, the Indian Hills. And we had, you know, straight up the road is the mountain, straight up the mountain is the tip of Squaw Peak. You know, that's what we're looking at every day. And, you know, after not too long, we actually had a house right there, literally out my back door. We could walk, hike straight up the face of Squaw Peak to the tip. And we did that a number of times. So yeah, grew up in Provo and hung around in the mountains enough, but interestingly enough, I never really was into running at all. And I lived there until I was 21 before moving to Phoenix. But being one of eight kids, six siblings, and then later on having, four step brothers and sisters too, there's a bunch of us and we were always running around, playing night games, playing football games, basketball games. I mean, we were just a really active bunch. And so me being the second youngest of eight, of the eight kids and third youngest of the 12 kids, and on the smaller size, the smaller side of things, I had to be quick, man. I had to run from people a lot. I had to chase after people a lot if I wanted to hang. And so I think I just that environment always had me kind of running and gunning. But yeah, it wasn't till our time in Phoenix and just kind of get to that point in life. You got kids and the massive bowl of ice cream or the massive two bowls of ice cream at night, they don't sit the same as they did, a few years ago. So that combined with I had a brother that got into the marathons and the Ironmans, he kind of nudged us. That's what he does. He's a nudger, and he was kind of nudging us to get in the game with him. And so he eventually kind of pulled me in and got me exposed to to running. Interestingly enough, we moved up to Southern Utah to Cedar City, and it was I still was only running on the roads. And I had a good friend up there, Eric Lewis, that was like, "Hey, Mike, I'm gonna do this run in Zion National Park. It's called the Zion Traverse, and you run from one side of Zion to the other side. You should do it with me." I was like, "Oh, that sounds kind of cool. Okay, well, what do we need to do?" It's like, "Well, we got to start running on trails." So it's like, "Okay." So I still remember that first trail run I ever did out at Three Peaks, and we set out. I think we were only doing like 6 miles. Like, I think it was the what's the see, I'm already forgetting the names of the loops.
Big hole
But
loop.
man, like, we start going and I'm just dying. Like, I'm just breathing like crazy, about to cough up a lung, my heart's about to pound out the chest. And then I still have that road running mindset. So I look at my Garmin and it's like, "Oh, I'm doing like a 12-minute mile." Like, what? This, I'm just like, "Oh my gosh, this sucks." And I hated every minute of that trail run and didn't enjoy it. And I don't know that I enjoyed much of that training cycle. But when we got to Zion, it was pretty cool. It was a pretty special experience. That first go didn't end well. Got some pretty bad dehydration, heat exhaustion. We didn't have water source where we thought we would. But then we went back a year or two later and did it again. And it was on that run that, man, I was converted.
That's so cool. I love that, kind of what got you into trail running was a friend and this like adventure kind of idea. And that's what a lot of I feel like trail runners are attracted to is the adventure aspect of it, right? Like go play in the mountains and do this like big point to point route or this loop that makes sense to go around this thing or landmark. Really cool. And that Zion Traverse. Yeah, unfortunately now it's blocked off. And so
I
it's
know.
impassable for the most part, but that's a really cool route. So awesome. All right. Well, I wanted to get into the main topic of our discussion tonight, and that is sudden death December. So let me ask you, Mike, to I guess tell us kind of the setup of what Sudden Death December is, if there are any rules, kind of just introduce the topic for us, and then Patrick, I'll have you kind of chime in as well, but.
So, just to give a little history lesson, according to my memory, it started, I think it was like 6, 7 years ago. And a good friend, Randy Whitelaw, he posted a run November 1st, and he said, "No rest November," I think day one of 30 or something. And so naturally, we all, some of our little circle friends see that, we're like, "No rest November, what?" And he's like, "Oh, I'm going to run a 5K a day to be proactive in not, you know, letting the holidays get the best of me, right? And so a few of us are like, oh, I'm in, I want to do that. So for November, we ran a 5K every day. And I think we had probably like 8 or 10 of us in the region do it. So then the next year, his brother, Brett Whitelaw, kind of like took it to the next level. So he kind of made it like a little official group organized event, upped the ante to 10K. And yeah, we did the 10K and it was a blast. And I think we had like 15 to 20 people do it that year. But as the month wound down, a few of us were like, well, who wants to go on to sudden death December? I think we just kind of pulled the name out of, you know, our hat and make it last one standing, see who can go the longest. And so I think it went, we had three of us make it to like the 16th or 17th of December. And basically what happens in sudden death December is we add an additional kilometer to that 10K. So like December 1st, now you're running 11K. December 12th, you're running 12K. And it just continues to compound until basically there's one person remaining. And so we made it to the 17th. There was some injury, there was some drama, and all of a sudden the fun was gone. And so I think we all kind of collectively were like, all right, we're out, you know? So, and then the next year, you know, it kind of repeated and got bigger. And then we hit COVID. And I feel like that was the year where people were like, I want in because there's no races. Like people are looking for that, like that something to do and that purpose. And so we had a huge group, a lot of fun that year. And it's now been going for like, yeah, I think it's been 6 or 7 years. And I think this year we had 44 people take on the challenge. You know, and we've had people from Utah, Arizona, back east in Virginia, in England. I mean, literally people from all over the place. So, yeah, that's pretty cool.
So just to kind of recap that. So no rest November, run 10K every day in November. And then on top of that, then December 1st, you run 11K. December 2nd, you run 12K. You add 1K per day. And then it's last one standing from there. So By December 30th, like the theoretical end to the challenge, right, would be you're at 40K. So that's just under 25 miles by calculation. Yeah. So that's a lot. And so that would be a total of, I totaled this up, that'd be a total of 765K in just December alone. Almost 500 miles, 475 miles in December if you ended there. So
that sounds right. I'm no math guy, but that sounds right.
Okay. Patrick, do you want to enlighten us? What are like the rules around this as far as like, does each run, and I know some of the rules, but just for the listeners, does each run, do you have to do it all at once? Does walking count? Does like what counts as running? Do you have to get in all the mileage in between, like on the day, like in between midnight of the previous day and midnight of the day itself? Like, what are those rules, if there are any?
Nate, that's a great question. And what Mike didn't tell you is it's a closed group by invite only. So that's why people are like, well, why haven't I heard about this? Am I? No, so one day I got a call from a friend named Garrett Foster, and he told Brett, he goes, hey, I got a friend who would be perfect for this. Like, can I introduce him? And so Brett's like, yeah, fine. So Garrett gave Brett my email address. And so he emailed me. And the first rule of Sudden Death December is you have to read the email. He has a PDF attachment with all the rules for the race. You have to read it, and then you have to email him back saying, I have read the rules, and basically declare that you've read that email, or else you're DNF'd on day one. No, you're out. Second thing you have to do is you have to Venmo him your money. So it's kind of like a fantasy football pool. Everyone pitches in. So there's prize money if you win. And then there's bets, there's side bets, there's all kinds of crazy wagers that people win. In fact, Mike this year won the side bet for the most OG. So one great thing about Sudden Death December, it comes with its own vocabulary. So OG stands for original gangsta, which means you did your entire run sequential with no, I mean, you can stop and break, but you didn't stop for like an hour and then recompete.
I saw that acronym on Strava, and I put two and two together that it meant that you did your run all at once that all day. But I had no idea what it stood for.
Yeah. So it's kind of a way to kind of flex on the people that you're running against. Like, yeah, I'm OG. I know you did yours in three or four runs. Good for you. But this is the OG right here. So there is money for the person that went OG the longest. And Mike went well past Christmas. I don't even think I made it to the 19th of December this year or something. So he pocketed that money. So he was getting money before the event even ended. So we start, everyone pools their money. Mike and I and a couple other people basically wagered on the overall victory. So most people don't wager on overall unless they think they have a chance. And that's called the gambler. So that's kind of a bigger pot, bigger stake. But again, anyone can put up side bets and stuff. So it's really fun. It's like a group of friends. And the side bets this year are kind of different than last year. So it's kind of an evolving thing. But Brett Whitelaw is the glue. He's the person you have to run everything through. He's the one sending out the emails, the rules, making sure everyone understands it, collecting the money, Venmoing the money out. So it's kind of his party. So it's a lot of fun. And when I talked to Brett, I just had a couple questions before I made the decision to jump in. My first question was, sudden death December, so it keeps going up. I'm like, what's the maximum anyone's ever done? He goes, I think a couple of people have done Christmas. And so I was kind of doing the math in my mind. I'm like, I should be good for Christmas. I'm in, I'll come take all your money. It was like, cause I didn't know who Greer was. I didn't know who Reese Jones, like I'd never met these people. All of these people were all new for me. So I didn't realize how badass they were, quite honestly. Like, So I got in and I thought I would just show up and just take the money. And it turned out to be completely the opposite. It was an event unlike, I don't know, Mike, you can talk too, but just unlike anything I've ever done. Cause everything else in running, you train and then you have a focused time frame and you focus and you perform and then you're done and then you can recover and move on. Here, like the event doesn't have a finality. It's like, it's always on. So you can't just train, taper, run, rest. Like that's all out the window. It's like, you have to figure out how to race and eat your food and get your sleep at night and do your job and spend time with your family and everything else. And so it kind of shifts itself as the event progresses from a running kind of competition into like a life and time management competition. And so it's crazy because then you start getting, you need more time. So where does that come from? Probably less sleep. You got to wake up earlier and earlier and earlier to get stuff done before the work day starts, which means you're getting less and less sleep. You're becoming more delirious. And so honestly, it's a really, really, really hard contest. And honestly, I'm looking forward to Cocodona. I'm looking forward to Wasatch. I'm looking forward to just focusing for a day or five right on a race and then being done and then kind of like mentally like taking a break. But to have something that's always on the back of your mind for 2 months in a row was crazy.
And oh, by the way, it's a growing monster. It's getting bigger. So while you're getting less sleep, trying to fit the same things into your day, you've got a bigger and bigger task at hand day by day. I know we've said it, we call it it's the ultra that keeps on giving. So, but it's true to its name of Sudden Death December, more times than not, when it ends like that. I mean, it's like you go from 60 miles per hour, 100 miles per hour to nothing, you know? So when people start dropping, it's like, oh my gosh, what? Like you can't almost believe it. You know, you get to a point where you just think it's going to go on forever. And then people start dropping off and it's like, what? It's over just like that.
Yeah. What happened is a lot of people, no rest November is hard for a lot of people because a lot of people don't operate with no rest days. Like they'll rest 1 or 2 days a week, whatever. So this is like, for a lot of people was their first experience with no rest for 30 in a row. So, you know, that streak, that streak philosophy, like I train every day, at least something, like I don't want to go zero any days. And so the concept of streak wasn't foreign to me. For a lot of people though, it was super hard. So it was really cool to see them get to December 1st in the first place. And so it was like, kudos. If you get to December 1st, you get a bottle cap. And it's amazing. All the awards from this race are all little bottle caps with little magnets on them. I wish I had them here. They're in my other office, but yeah. So you get one of those. If you get to Christmas, you get another bottle cap. And so you usually see Christmas, everyone gets the bottle caps, and the 26th is like mass carnage. And the real fun rule about this is that there's really not a referee to disqualify you. Like, you do post your runs on Strava, but at the end of the day, you're not officially out until A, you don't run for a 24-hour period, and B, you post an obituary. You can't get out of this race. Is you're not officially dead in this race until you write an obituary. So it's really funny to see what people come up with. Honestly, I look at my Strava groups all the time just to read people's obituaries, and they're hilarious. And so it's a really out there competition, and I just love that it keeps evolving and getting more fun.
Yeah, I didn't realize that they were called obituaries, but we're gonna read from y'all's obituaries a little bit later.
Oh here. My goodness.
They were beautiful. So we've got to highlight some of the things in there. But anyways, I loved what you said, Patrick. You were saying, you know, because it's so different than even like a 200-mile race or even one of these like last one standing races where, you know, backyard ultras where you run a 4-mile loop, like, you know, every hour or something like that, last one standing. Those kind of events are still like contained within a time frame, right? Like, even if it lasts a week, like it's still just a week and you're not trying to work as well. You're not trying to spend time with your family. You're focused on that thing. Not to say those things aren't hard, because those, I can't imagine doing one of those myself either, but it becomes less of a race or less of a, like an ultra race and more of a time management thing. And so that's really interesting. I wanted to talk about just a few of the different kind of stories that I discovered as I followed you guys and looked back at your Stravas during it. Patrick, it looks like you kind of traveled even quite a bit, like during the effort to California, to Florida. It looks like you went to a soccer game there. At the team that Lionel Messi's on and Real Salt Lake. So I guess, what was that like, you know, not only working from home and, or not from home necessarily, but like, and your family, but also like traveling and trying to get, you know, a 5 to 6 hour run in during the day.
Yeah. That was the hardest part, is, you know, during this whole thing last year, and this might be TMI, so I apologize. I had a colonoscopy scheduled 6 months prior to me even joining Sudden Death December. So I knew that on December 13th, I was going in for a colonoscopy, which isn't that bad, except for the 24 hours prior, you have to fast. I don't know if you've ever tried running 14 miles completely bone dry, empty, but it's hard. And then after the procedure's over, then you have to recover and then run 14 or 15 miles the day after, still with not a lot of stuff in your body. So like, it was really, really, really hard to do that kind of stuff. And then travel's insane. You just look at your flight schedule. And the one thing that I used to kind of get around some of those problems was the midnight run, because you can start running at 12:01 a.m. It's technically the next day. So you can go grab 4 hours of running and then be at the airport by 5 a.m. Like, so those early morning runs saved me. And then breaking up, see, you can't really do OG if you're traveling, because you might need to do 10 before you go and 10 once you get there, kind of a thing. And so that was really the plan. But this year, the monkey wrench in my schedule was really my wife. Because last year she was there supporting me and everything else, and it was me who had the procedure, and I had to kind of work around that. But this year she had a procedure done on December 27th. She had double knee replacement surgery. Mm-hmm. So think about trying to get, you know, a near marathon done the day before the operation, the day of the operation, the day after the operation, bringing her home from the hospital, all the ice packs. When the nursing duties shift from the hospital onto me, and I'm her primary caregiver, like, it's literally, what do you need and when do you need it? And then run in the, like, it was insane. So that was kind of the thing this year. And then my son had to go out to California to try out for a marching band that he was trying to get into, a post-collegiate, a marching band that he did make his way into, called the Blue Devils. Super cool. But for me, once Sudden Death December really gets going in, for some reason this year, like, our December weather was like perfect here in Utah. We barely had any rain, not that much snow. It was like 45, 40, 50 degrees. It wasn't even that bad. It was kind of like more like St. George weather up here. But then, man, January 1st hit. Once New Year's hit, man, the rain, the snow, the wind, all of that stuff kicked in. So I saw any trip to California of Northern Cal, so I don't care where it is. Like, it's like an oasis in the desert where I can actually get some miles and not have, you know. So I get to California and there's a huge rainstorm. And I was like, I looked on the, I'm like, come on, Greer needs to get some weather. Why is Arizona not raining? Like, I cannot get. So I ran probably 15 miles of the 30 that I had to run that day. I found a local community college up in Concord, and they had these massive rows of solar panels for covered parking in their like faculty parking lot. And I just ran loops back and forth because then my Garmin could still see the satellites, but I wouldn't get rain on me. And so I just ran for hours underneath those stupid solar panels. It was just like, it's kind of like MacGyver, right, Mike? Like, you just have to figure it out because you never know what's going to happen. Because one of the rules that we failed to mention is it has to be outdoors. There's no treadmill. So you have to be outdoors within satellite, you know, vision of your Garmin. So if it's raining or snowing or there's elements that day, you got to figure it out. Like, you're going to be out there in them. So that was the hard part. Physically, it was hard, but then I don't know, the mental was probably the hardest because you feel good physically and then you wake up and you see the weather report is just snow and ice and wind. And you're just like, it's so hard to just put your clothes on and just put your, you know, extra layer and just go out there because you know you're going to get snow in your face. I actually got, Mike, I didn't just show you these, but I got these clear goggles. And so I was ready. I'm like, if it snows again, I'm wearing the goggles, the ski goggles, like, what's her name? Brittany Feller. We actually have one participant who lives at a ski resort. So she's running in blizzards like most of the days. It's like insane. Like, she has like literally Eskimo clothes on, Brittany, the snow cat Feller. So, but it's also interesting and also inspiring kind of being in the group because you see everyone else's workouts. You see people that just do insanely hard, you know, have insanely hard days, insanely slow days. You can see their pace. You can see their heart rates. Like, you know that other people are struggling and still finding time to get it done. So that gives me, you know, a lot of motivation. I mean, just seeing Mike's stuff every day, I'm like, man, this guy made it look easy. Like, I'm like, man, I'm struggling all day long for 7, 8, 9 hours and bro knocks it out in 4.5. I'm just like, how do I keep up with that? Like, there's so much self-talk, I guess. You just have lots of conversations with yourself. Like, why am I doing this? He's unbeatable. His stats are better than me. It's going to snow tomorrow. Like, all these things hit you. Like, my kids have stuff and I don't want to miss because my kids are seniors in high school. There's only a couple more months and it's over. Like, so you want to make every second count. And honestly, now that it's over, like, I actually made more use of my time back then than I do now. Like, I had more time back then. I took better care of my wife. I did the dishes. I did everything back then because it was so regimented. And now I'm a little more sloppy and everything else. And so I hated it, but I kind of miss it. And it's a weird feeling.
Yeah, that's really interesting because I think, and Mike, this is kind of a perfect transition to you because I saw that you had posted either on Strava or Instagram or somewhere, but you were saying how you had to make some sacrifices, you know, with certain things that you cut out to be able to get in your runs. So, you know, like Patrick, what was your experience with, I guess, you know, the kind of the timing of your runs, when you would get them in, and what kind of, I guess, like family circumstances or things like that did you bump into during the effort?
Yeah, every year it's kind of chaotic. Like, at home, I mean, it's a tall order for the family, for the spouse especially. And so it's been very square peg in round hole-ish every year. This year was different. Like, it almost has been like adapted as just a part of the holiday festivities. Like, oh yeah, it's on Death December. Yep, Mike's got to go do his run. You know, granted, I really worked to get them done like early AM. So I'm home for breakfast. I'm not missing out on family stuff. But this year, it just like was just kind of, I think, expected that it was going to happen. My wife was super supportive of it. My kids were super supportive of it. And maybe that contributed to me not being as good, especially initially with getting my butt out of bed. Like, I really struggled to get up and get out early on. And I think
what time are you getting up usually to get your run in?
So ideally, I'm getting out. I mean, I try to be done by like 8 o'clock so I can see my kids, do some breakfast before they're off to school and whatnot. But like I said, this year was a struggle. I think Patrick and I both almost in November like DNF'd, because of sickness. I think Patrick was
I
sick
almost DNF'd on day one.
and
I was the defending champion on day one. So the hardest part is you're getting ready for this mentally on Halloween, because the next day the thing starts. So Halloween night,
going.
ding dong, people are ringing the bell, wanting candy, and I'm just like, I can't keep anything down. I'm a wreck. I'm like, I can't even walk to the front door. How am I gonna do a 10K tomorrow? Like, it was crazy.
Yeah, but there comes a point where for everybody, like, you just have to draw that line and understand that like the runs are becoming so long that like if I don't get out like now by this time, like I don't have time at the back half of the day or in the evening, after kids are in bed to get out and get it done. And even if I do and I'm going up till midnight, it's like you got to turn around and do it the very next day. And so a few times I got stuck on, I call it the PM shift, where I just get stuck running in the evenings and afternoons. And it's just a tough cycle because it's like the wife is tired, the kids are tired, everybody's tired, I'm tired. And it's like, oh, by the way, I got to get out and knock out 25 miles.
Like
Like,
there was one night where I think you had to do like mid eights and you finished like at 11:55 or something. It was like you were right on the cusp. I was like, oh my
yeah,
gosh.
I got out the door and I knocked out my first 1 or 2 miles, and I'm doing the math and I'm like, I'm not gonna make it by midnight. I got to pick it up. And I picked up the pace but eventually there comes a point where it's like, I've got to get out in the morning. I've got to knock it out. For me, I don't have that luxury of, I mean, breaking up the runs, there's pros and cons to any way that you slice it. For me in my situation, knocking it out all at once, schedule-wise, it's what I needed to do. But then also for my body, like I was dealing with some glute issues early on. And that was kind of my motivation early on, was like, can I get pushed through these issues and get Christmas, get through the month? And so my body needed that 20, hours of recovery versus like, okay, I'm gonna do, 12 miles now and 12 miles later. Well, now I've only got, 10 hours of recovery before I gotta do it again. Yeah, just comes a point where you just got to get up and knock it out. But to Patrick's point, it really does force you to just trim the fat out of your life. Like, you're not thinking about sports games, you're not thinking about TV shows, like you're not thinking about, I mean, I love Strava. I try to limit myself to like an hour of Strava a day, and through Sudden Death December, it's like, man, that's got to go. Like, you just have to get really focused with your time. And I agree with Patrick. Like, it's frustrating. My goal out of it was to be really focused, and here I am feeling like so unproductive, and it's just frustrating because it's like, what the crap, man? Like, I've
As
got
you know, now
six
we
more hours of my day,
know
and
what
I'm
we're
less
capable
productive.
of, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, I
Yeah.
don't know. It's interesting.
Well, that is interesting. And I guess like I want to go back to so this was obviously an effort. You know that it had an end, but it's also like one of the hard parts about any challenge in life, really. For most races, right? You know that there's an end, there's a finish line. But for this one, it's like, I don't know exactly when this is going to end. So talk about that and why that makes this kind of challenge so difficult and unique. Because like in life too, like when you're, I don't know, going through an illness or an injury, again, you don't know when it's going to end. So why is that like sudden death December?
Well, for me, this might sound weird. This year was easier than last year because last year was my first time. So I didn't know what to expect. And so I made lots of mistakes. Like Rhys Jones, who was in the finals with me last year, he had like a, I don't know if it was just, I don't know, but he always ran the last 1 or 2 miles at like a 7-minute mile just to kind of flex and say, psh, I ain't tired or whatever. And so there was days I would go out there and I would run way too hard just because I don't know, I wanted to impress people on Strava or do stuff, and then I'd be wrecked for a couple days. And I was never really thinking about what the future Patrick needed. I was just thinking about myself today. because I didn't know if today was going to be the last day or not. And so I didn't do smart things and every day, and I never done the event. So I didn't know if I was going to drop out on Christmas or New Year's, or I just no idea. And so that unknown was just really, really just hard mentally. And this year I had the benefit of knowing what I did last year and knowing how I felt along those days so that I could plan. And so my only goal, and the other thing too, is I focused way too much on the other guy. Like I didn't just worry about this guy, like, cause this is the only thing I can control, but I was seeing his stuff and I was really just drawn into the whole, you know, competition aspect of it and stuff. And this year I was just like, I'm just going to worry about me and beating my goal. So last year I did January 12th. And so I'm like, I don't know if Reese is going to make it, Mike's going to make it, or just whatever happens. And honestly, if like Mike would have dropped on January 1st, like I would have still gone by myself to the 12th, because like I had to do that because I just have to beat my old self. Like that's my main objective. And so once
I'm not going to lie, I was very tempted to put that to the test multiple times.
But once I got to the 12th, then again, I re-entered no man's land. Once you're in no man's land, it's just the weirdest thing. And so, I mean, it was tough, but knowing what I know now that I learned from last year is that, man, I took December really easy. Like I was like run walking, I was going slow, I was watching my heart rate the whole time. I did several runs under 100 beats. And so it was just, I gotta save myself for January. Like I know January is gonna get hard. And so I saw people just crushing their December runs and stuff. And I'm just like, well, good for you. I'm just kind of like the tortoise and the hare thing. I'm just going to be the hare. I'm going to be the turtle. And we're just going to do our thing. And that's also the funny thing too, is when you're not running, like you still have to kind of keep eating, because tomorrow you're going to need those nutrients when you wake up and you got to go again. And so when you stop doing this, like, I think I've put on at least 5 pounds already. Like I got to back up the truck a little bit, but yeah, so just preparing and running for 2 or 3 days in advance, like not pushing too hard, not getting lactic acid, staying below your anaerobic threshold and constant calories. So that, I mean, this year I never really got sore. Like I got tired and I got delirious and a bunch of stuff, but like muscle soreness and stuff was never really that problematic. Where last year, man, there were days I could barely move.
Yeah. Speaking of that, Mike, you had kind of a lingering injury kind of going through the last bit of it, or I guess tell us, when did it kind of start and how did it end?
It started back in November. So just a long week, a couple weeks of travel for work and driving up to the Grand Canyon and everything else. Like I just, my right glute just started really bugging. And even now, as I sit here, like sitting is just the worst thing. It's still an issue. But it's sitting that's really the big problem with it. So how do we walk about life without sitting? That's what I'm trying to figure out. So it didn't look good. And early on, I thought like there's just no way. In fact, I kind of typed up my obituary or whatever, like I'm out. And then I was like, maybe I should wait till the morning. I'm gonna regret that decision. And I texted my PT and then immediately thought like, I'm such an idiot. Like, I can't believe I just asked her if she thinks I'm an idiot for like wanting to do this challenge that means nothing. And to my surprise, she responded back immediately and was like, absolutely, I think you can run through that. She kicked me over a work routine and I started doing some PT stuff. And that was kind of my motivation early on, was like, you know, naturally we want to, when it gets hard or things start, you know, breaking down, it just, oh, I got to stop. But that's not always the case. And in my experience, it's rarely the case. And so that was my motivation. And then when we hit January 1st, it was like, okay, why am I going to keep going? Patrick Oborn, he is the epitome of a winner. The guy, like, you're not going to beat the guy. And if that's my motivation and my drive, like, I'm going to hate every second of this challenge. And so I wanted to see what I could do, how I could do, how far I could go while maintaining life. And that kind of drove me the rest of the way, you know, and, you know, the injury was always kind of there, but nothing that prevented me from doing the miles, obviously.
Yeah, that's really interesting how you said kind of your motivation had to change, especially like maybe because of that injury, right? Because you're like, why am I like going to kill myself just to beat somebody else, right? I'll kill myself to like kill myself, like to show how far I can go, instead of just like trying to beat the other guy. So that's really interesting. Patrick, when you hear that, like, does that resonate with you, or what are your thoughts on the other side of the table from what Mike's experiencing?
No, I was just in awe because we actually got together in November and went running just around Tempe Town Lake after one of Mike's work events. I think we did 14 miles that day. We were up to 14, and his glute was hurting. So we were kind of going a little slower than he's used to going and stuff. And then I just watched him on Strava get progressively faster and faster. I'm like, man, that glute problem's gone, man, because he's getting faster, looking stronger. And it's inspiring to me. Like, I've always been a Mike Greer fan. Like, I knew about him before I actually met him when he won the Zion 100 a couple years ago. I was actually there crewing someone else, and I could just hear the aid station people talking about, did you see how fast Greer was flying through here? He's in first place. And I'm like, man, maybe one day I'll meet this Michael Greer guy. That'd be like so cool. And so just even, I don't know, even being the same sentence and the same event is a guy like that. Like, it was humbling to me and just super exciting. So I was, you know, and then we've formed a really good friendship last year during this event. And then I saw him at several events last year, actually during some of the events, and then doing it this year was just super awesome. He's like one of my best friends now. And so honestly, one of my favorite parts of this year was when he would just give me a call at like 3 a.m. because he knew I was out running, and I knew he was out running, you know, and it was lonely. Like, we didn't have a lot of pacers and a lot of people. So just having those midnight conversations with a guy who literally understands what you're going through, like on every level, was just, it was profound, and still to this day, one of my best friends. And so I'm grateful for that experience too.
And I think it's real quick. Sorry. I think it's interesting because an interesting dynamic, Patrick and I think we both have so much admiration for one another. I also think we both view each other as an underdog. Like, I think I'm an underdog when stacked against Patrick. I think he might feel the same way. And so you've got that dynamic in there as well. But at the end of the day, I don't think, you know, competing wasn't the driving force. You know, it's like any ultra, right? Like, it's a personal thing. It's you versus you. And that's the neat thing with this kind of competition, and the journey is just discover, you know, that self-discovery. And I wonder, like, you know, I wonder what's over that hill, you know, I wonder what's around this corner. Like, that's kind of, I think what it was like for both of us. So, and that's why at some point it just seems like maybe it will never end.
Yeah, it was funny. I had a little, not a secret weapon or whatever, but I had a friend in Florida, and he called me literally every day of this competition and talked to me for 30 minutes. And at the end of every conversation, he'd always say, well, have a good run. My money's still on Greer. So he told me that every single day. And I was like, all right. And it was just, I don't know if he thought it was motivating to me, whatever, but I thought you'd get a laugh out of that, man. It was so funny. It's like, call him back the last day. I'm like, I'll be taking your money right now.
So fun. That's hilarious. Fun. What's your friend's name?
Steve from Orlando.
Good old Steve. All right. I have a couple just quick hit kind of questions for you, Patrick, that I saw posted on your Strava. So can you tell us about the modified no trespassing sign that made an appearance a few times throughout the competition? What was that all about?
So that no trespassing sign is on the backyard of a massive multi-million dollar like yard. It's got a barn that has a built-in gym, swimming pool, like outdoor kitchen. Awesome. It's Scott Mumford's house. And so Scott Mumford's a close friend of both Mike and I's. And every day I'd run by, because it was like mile 3 or 4. And it was kind of like, I always invite him to run with me because he's kind of like my pacer and stuff. And he was always too busy to go. So I'd always take a picture to say, I'm by your house again. And you're not running with me. So finally he came out. He's like, okay, I'm running with you. I'm going to And so that's why one day there's actually a sign that says no trespassing except for Patrick or whatever. And but it's just funny because I mean I literally ran by his backyard every single day and just wanted to let everyone know that I was at Scott Mumford's house because he's like the godfather of trail running up here. In fact, Mike actually drove several hours, was it to the north rim of the Grand Canyon to help him. He was trying to set an FKT from rim to rim and got stuck behind a bunch of donkeys and hit his FKT. But he's a fantastic guy and yeah, that's his backyard.
That's so cool. Is that along the, I mean, maybe we shouldn't disclose kind of where it is, but never mind. I won't ask that question.
Do
but
it.
Is it along like the Murdoch Canal Trail? There?
Yes. Yes. It's literally on the trail. Like his yard and the trail are like touching.
I think I know where that is. I've run along that trail a lot. My in-laws used to live there in Pleasant Grove. So. All right, cool. And then another quick hit question for you. And then this is more like kind of a touching kind of story that I saw pop up on Christmas Eve. So it looks like you made a kind of a good friend at a gas station where you would get hot chocolate and a donut frequently. I don't know if it was every day, but frequently. And you said hi to a man named Dave there, the manager who worked at the gas station. And you gave him a Christmas present. So can you tell us a little bit about that story?
Yeah. So one of the things I like to do just to mentally motivate myself is give myself a treat like during the run. And so at mile 7, there's a place called Top Stop, which is like, you know, a Maverick or an AMPM or 7-Eleven. And I just stop and get a hot chocolate because most days it's like below 20 degrees. It's cold and that hot chocolate just, it feels so good going down there. And so I was just going in there every day and made friends with the manager because he literally saw me every day. And he's and back then when we got into Sudden Death December, there was actually two of us up here, John Kingsbury and my buddy, and he lives in Harriman. So we would kind of like meet at that place and then kind of go back to our respective sides of the valley. And so I'd always ask him, has John been here? He's like, oh no, he hasn't been here yet. Or, oh, he was here an hour ago, man, you missed him. And so it was just kind of funny. We just became his friend. And yeah, and then I just, hey, how you doing, man? He's like, oh, you know, I'm just trying to pay some bills. I'm living in my daughter's basement, you know, but things will work out and everything. And so I just check up on him every day, you know, just make sure, just give him a little bit of sunshine every day. And then Christmas came and I'm like, you know, this guy's been so nice to me. He doesn't know who I am. He doesn't, and I'm just some weird runner guy who comes in out of the cold every day and drinks this hot chocolate. Like, who is this guy? And, you know, and so I'm like, you know, why don't we just do like a secret Santa and give him an envelope. And so I had it in my running backpack. And so I stuffed it in there and went and just recorded it, just not to be braggadocious or anything else, but just to kind of share the spirit of giving with other people, maybe encourage other people to do something nice for somebody. And it was great. Don't regret any of it. And he's still a great guy. I still see him once in a while when I always fill my car up with gas there. I became a rewards member. He's like, do you have a rewards card? I'm like, no, but I'm getting one because I come here every stinking day. I'm your best customer. So yeah, he's just a great guy. And you know, there's a, you know, we're blessed to do what we do. And there's a lot of people who don't have the time. They're working their butts off to like not get evicted. And yeah, there's people out there that need a leg up sometimes. So.
And that's the exact actually next follow-up question that I had planned for this after telling this anecdote was that, you know, like at the end of the day, like we as runners are very privileged to like be able to, you know, go out and run like, you know, an hour a day, an hour or two, and up to five or six during some periods, special periods of our lives. But like, you know, while on the other side of the spectrum, there are people that are working their butts off just like trying to get by. Right. And, you know, they don't have time to go out for a hour or two run, let alone like maybe even exercise 15, 30 minutes or something. Right. Or maybe just the way that they grew up, they didn't see that happening like in their home or something like that. So, Mike, if I can ask you this kind of question, I guess, like, how do you, like look at, I guess, yourself in that light or what reflections do you have on that as being kind of like just, like what kind of feelings does that evoke, you know, gratitude, you know, appreciation for your ability to run and exercise as you wish pretty much.
Oh man, that's a deep question. I mean, it's everything, and it's funny that that's come up because that's something that's been on my mind a lot lately. Oddly enough for me, post sudden death December, like I don't know, my head's been in a weird place, and like I've had a lot of self-doubt, like a lot of self-doubt. And we're both planning to do Cocodona 250 here in just a couple months. I did it last year, finished, good time. And yet I feel,
Race, by the way, not only a good time, but podium finish, third place.
well, I feel like so much doubt in being able to do it again, wondering if I can, if my body can hold up, if I want to do it. And what initially was kind of motivated by besting myself from last year, running a better race, performing better, it's really my mind has shifted to like exactly what we're talking about, like how lucky I am to get out each and every day. I get out and knock out miles and have that time to think and to unplug. And so it's kind of the point where it's like it almost doesn't even matter if I get even to the start line of that race. I just want to be, I need to shift my mindset back to just having an attitude of gratitude and just being grateful for each and every day that I can do it, I get to do it. And because we don't know, I mean, we don't know what tomorrow holds for us or the next day. And so, but I think to me, that's one of the biggest takeaways from running and ultra running is just that perspective and that just the gratitude that can come from just thinking and having that different perspective. And but at the same time, it's easy to get caught up in the racing and the times and all the other stuff too, when that's not, I don't think most of us would think, say that's what it's about.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. And that is what it's all about, right? Like the relationships that we have with people that form, and just appreciation and gratitude for being able to do what we're able to do. So just super, super important. Thanks for highlighting that, both of you. But let's take it to the end here. So the results, right? The numbers, because they are very interesting and impressive. Although we don't tie up our we won't, cross the line and tie up our identification and total identity in them. But so Mike, you made it to January 18th was your like last full day, if I have that right from your Strava. And then you made it partway through January 19th. On the 18th, you ran a 59K, so 36.7 miles. And on the 19th, it looks like you ran about 13 miles, when you were supposed to go close to 37 or so. But for a total of 1,116 miles, just for, I guess, from December 1st and on. So that's not counting the no rest November, but over a
Not
thousand
bad.
miles, right? And Patrick, you made it one more day than Mike, or you ended on your last day was January 20th, running a 61K or 37.9 miles for a total of 1,141 miles for the whole challenge. And that's assuming that you only ran the minimum. Those were my calculations. Maybe you a couple point this mile, point that K. And went a little bit longer than that. But that's those are the numbers if you ran exactly what you were supposed to each day, which I'm assuming you tried not to run any farther than you had to each day. But then a couple more numbers. So it was 80 or 81 consecutive days of running for each of you. And the last 17 or 18 of those days were, in the ultra distances, like above a marathon, right? So that's pretty impressive. But like I said, I wanted to go back to kind of your last posts. So we'll start with you, Mike. And I just wanted to read a little bit from your obituary, as you guys call them. Some you Mike, you started with alternate titles that you could have named this last run? I think you officially named it a not so sudden death to sudden death December or something like that, but you could have called it Happy Birthday Patrick. Was it Patrick's birthday that day?
Well, yeah, because he wouldn't have to run anymore.
Oh, that's so it was just like a more congratulations or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. All Good Things Must Come to an End was another alternate title you gave. Running was the easy part. The ultra that kept on giving. And then the last one you said was It Isn't About the Running, which we kind of have already talked a lot about. And then just bear with me for a second, because I do want to read a lot of what you said in here. I won't read the whole thing. It was very long, and I encourage people
that's good.
But let me just quote here a little bit, because it is beautiful. It says, first and foremost, massive congrats to Patrick Oborne. The guy is as good of a human as you'll ever find. Not only is he insanely good looking, he is so kind, is crazy driven, and will stop at nothing to fulfill his goals. Thank you, Patrick, for pushing and pushing and pushing, and in turn causing me to push and push and push. No way I ever do anything like this and make all the self-discoveries I have without your push and example. Then you also thank your wife. You say, no, Kelly Greer, thank you for supporting, for your support on this. I love you. Then Randy Whitelaw, Brett Whitelaw, thank you for creating this ridiculously stupid, perfect challenge. Then another thing you say is you conclude with, friends, let's not settle for good enough in 2024. Join me in cutting crap out of our lives that we don't need, letting go of past troubles, and being laser focused on the good things of the future. There's so much more we are all capable of. I believe it with all my heart. I love you all. Keep grinding. Keep crushing. So as you, again, kind of reflect on your last day there, Mike, anything else that you want to say or that you want to talk about, you know, as you kind of reflect on your whole experience there?
Yeah, I mean, that's even just making me a little bit emotional. It just reminds me that, like, I mean, it really isn't about the running. It really isn't. And when I think about, when I reflect on this sudden death December, I really feel like it was this perfect storm. Like, if there's no Patrick, I just don't think it plays out the way that it did. And same thing, if I'm not in there, I don't know that it plays out the way that it did, it would have, you know, for Patrick either. But again, just cutting that fat and getting focused and really like making that discovery of like, holy crap, like how many days was it? Like, what was it, 18 days or whatever with back-to-back ultra runs? I mean, for me, a guy that's got, you know, a repaired, surgically repaired hip, you know, where the surgeon said your running days are over, like I never would have thought that like I had the capacity to do that. And not only to do it, but feel, you know, all things considered, feel really good at the end. Knees felt great. Hips felt great. The glute, still an issue. But like, you think about something like this and you think like, that's stupid. Like you're destroying your body. Like you're, and I think it's easy to probably visualize me and Patrick, like death marching it those final days. And it wasn't like the body adapted, the mind adapted, the life adapted, and we were able to do so much more than we ever thought we could. And it just made me realize, like, in what other areas am I selling myself short and thinking to myself, like, this is good enough, you know, when there's so much more I can do. And so really left there super motivated, but ultimately running, it's such a great unifier, man. And it's something I love about it. Like, whether you're doing a mile a day or a mile every 3 days or, you know, 10 or whatever, it doesn't matter. Like, I see people on the trails all the time and they're like, move out of the way. And I said, oh, you know, I'll tell them, oh, you've got the right of way. Go ahead. And they're like, oh, you're running. And I say, hey, a mile is a mile, no matter how you slice it. And I really believe that. Like, it's, you know, we're all kind of on the same journey, you know, different paths, but the same journey, and it can be so unifying. And that connection that we can gain through running is just so magical, and the peace that can come through that connection and through that discovery, that self-discovery is kind of everything. And honestly, I mentioned kind of my mind being all over the place the last few weeks. And honestly, I in part attribute it to like not running very much. Like I scaled my mileage way back to try to be responsible and like let the body heal and stuff. And I don't know, maybe I'm just the ultimate run junkie and I it's, you know, that drug I need, but it's a beautiful thing. It can be, and we've got to do our part to make it a beautiful thing and unifying for all, for everybody.
Yeah. Maybe it's like withdrawals or something, right? From
yeah. So
much. Another thing I did want to point out too, because this was important to you, and I talked to you about this when I was down there at Black Canyon, but another thing that you said in your obituary was, lastly, I thank God for his grace. I promised him I would devote each run to him. And let me tell you, 5 hours of gospel song, scripture, and prayer each day takes the running high to another level. Seek him. So just, I guess, just a little bit of more color on that, another brushstroke on that. What was the importance of God in this journey for you and devoting each run to him?
Well, going back to when I was like kind of one-legged, not thinking I could move on, that was another part of the story is I kind of said a prayer and basically asked God to let me continue on. And I promised, hey, every day you let me continue, I'm going to make it, I'm going to devote it to you. And so I really tried to, you know, whether I'm listening to scripture or, you know, saying a prayer in my heart or even reaching out to somebody that's on my mind, I just tried to not make it about me. And so honestly, and that's probably contributing to some of my mindset, you know, shift since then, because with the reduced mileage, I've kind of lost that approach too. But man, I was riding a high. Like it was, I came to treasure that 5-6 hour block of just meditation. And, you know, faith and God is kind of a touchy subject these days, but man, like for me, running and God go hand in hand. And for me, running demonstrates God and his hand in our lives. And similar to running and how I feel like it can be a great unifier, I think God and faith also can be an amazing unifier. It can also be a divider, you know, if we're not careful too. But you know, the proverbial lessons we learn from running and climbing the mountain and learning about the journey. And I think the same applied to our spiritual journey, our spiritual path. And, you know, sometimes, man, life is just freaking hard. And like, all we can do is, you know, say a prayer and, you know, ask for help and just put our best foot forward. And the same applies in ultra running. You know, we've all been in those deep dark pits, but in both cases, man, there's greater forces at hand, I believe, that can help us, you know, make it to the top and get over those hills. So it's very hand in hand, and I love it.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for including that, because I think that's really important. It is important to me as well. My spiritual journey and walk with God, right, is number one, or at least I try to make it right number one in my life, and there's definitely some parallels with running there. So thank you for that. Appreciate it. Patrick, I want to move on to you, your last day. So you can you just tell us the story, because it sounded like from what you had posted on Strava that you were unaware that Mike had finished or had stopped the previous day, but that you, like a day or two before that, had told your wife that you were going to stop on a certain day on January 20th. And again, it seemed like without knowing that Mike had already stopped or was also, you know, going to eventually drop out. So can you tell us that story?
Well, like Mike was saying, like this thing goes until it doesn't go anymore. And honestly, there are some days where I thought I can't quit, because I haven't even thought of an obituary yet. Like, I don't even have anything clever to say or anything else. Like a lot of people, they work on that for a while. And the problem is, mentally, if you have it written, like you can quit any day, like you've got the green light to quit. And so I'm like, if I just don't think about my obituary, then I can't quit. The other thing too, you know, and Mike did a really good job of expressing, you know, the spiritual journey and stuff. I think a lot of runners, maybe not a lot, but I think a good chunk of them battle with some type of depression issue. And I'm one of those people. And so a lot of times I look at myself in the mirror and I'm like, you're a loser, you're a piece of trash. There's like this little angel person on this shoulder and a devil person on this shoulder. And they're constantly whispering in your ears. And it just depends on like which voice you're listening to. And when I run, I tend to shut out the devil voice a lot and hear the angel voice and hear the good things. And when I'm not running, those negative voices start to get in my head and starts to mess with me. I don't know if it's the dopamine or what, but I cope a lot better with that chemistry in my body with running. It's just, it's a therapeutic thing. And I need it just like I need to eat breakfast and need to sleep. And like that's become a need in my life. But when we got deep, deep, deep into it, I got to the point where, like, I don't know if it's like a David Goggins thing, whatever, but like, if I quit, I would have to look myself in the mirror and say, you're a quitter. And I'm like, I can't do that. I can't look at that guy and call him a quitter. I can't do it. And I just couldn't bring myself to do that. I couldn't bring myself to write an obituary because I felt if I did either one of those things, it was the green light to pull the plug. So I knew that the end was getting near. Like Mike's posts were, he didn't even write anything on Strava anymore. It's just morning trail run. Like, that's it. He just uploaded it. And then I knew I was hurting. So I knew we were both hurting. And the last couple of days, like, we didn't even have time to call each other and check in on each other. Cause before we were doing check-ins and stuff. And like the last week it was just radio silence. Everyone just did their own work and just went out and got it done every day. And it got to the point, you know, Mike also talked about just the expansive nature of these runs. Like for me to get up and to answer your question, what time do you get up? It was 3 o'clock. 3 o'clock was the day. It was 4 o'clock and then 3:45 and 3:30 and then 3:15 and 3:00. And to be able to get up at 3:00, you have to be in bed by like 8:30. Like, you got to go to bed with the old people like me and try to do that. And so if I had a kid's concert, my wife would be like, hey, remember, we got a recital or whatever, a performance tonight. Like, those performances start at 7:30. They get over at 10. You get home at 11. Like, so you start stressing out. It's like, it's 8:30. It's like, I got to go to bed. It's 9. It's 10. Like, I'm going to get 3 hours of sleep. My run's going to suck. And then it's just going to domino and I'm going to have to quit. Like, and so going to bed early became a matter of like life and death. It, like, matter of quitting or not quitting this competition. Like, it got down to the razor's edge. Even the details started to matter. My kids are performers. They're artists. My daughter is a musical theater person. And my son is a trombone player and a musician. And they had some big concerts coming up. And I was just like, I don't want to sit and watch my daughter sing the whole time, looking at my watch thinking it's getting late. And then my run tomorrow is going to be screwed. Like, I'm here. I got to be in the moment. So even though I was mechanically doing everything right, like mentally, I just decided, like, I get one chance to be a dad. Like, I can't be there but not be there for some of the most important parts of their lives. And so I got to, I don't even know what day it was. And the run that day had gone great. I had all my stuff packed, my sandwiches made, all my stuff prepared for the next day. And then I just had the sinking feeling. I'm like, I gotta call it. Like, I can't, I want to be there and just watch the performances and just enjoy them and soak them in. It's the only time I'm ever going to get. And so I decided to call Mike and let him know, you know what? And literally within 5 minutes of making the decision, I was on the phone because I'm like, point of no return. I'd already done my run that day. It was in the afternoon. And so I called Mike and he's like, hey, what's going on? I'm like, hey, man, I think I'm done, man. And he's like, ah, dude, no way. Like, you can go longer. And I'm like, no, I can't. Like, I gotta be mentally there for my kids and stuff. And so he's like, well, you know, good luck with that. You know, I'll check you later. And so he knew that I was planning on quitting, but I didn't know that he had done his 13 miles the day that's the 13 mile day. And that he was honestly in a car with a bunch of young guys going up and taking them camping, being a good church leader and examples of those guys. And so the next day I woke up and my food was ready And interesting thing is, since I knew it was going to be my last day, I'm like, you know, I'm kind of known as the tortoise, right? I talk about the slow, just methodical. I was like, you know what? I'm going to go fast. I got a lot of fitness right now. I'm going to see if I can torch it. So it was like probably one of the runs where I was like the most, I don't know, proud of my life, but I did the whole 38 and like 8:40 average. So that was pretty cool. I've never done anything like that in my life. And now I look back, I'm like, that feels like a whole world ago and a whole person ago. Like I can't even, and honestly, I don't know if it wrecked me or something, but I still, I don't know. I'm not breathing right. And so I got some stuff to work out before Cocodona, you could say, but that's kind of how it ended. And I remember my last mile, I was at 37. I'm like, I have one more mile. And this whole sudden that December's over. And I don't even know if I told you this, but I shed a tear. I'm like, I'm going to miss it. Like it's kind of like I fell in love with my captor, you know, like the person that was causing me all this pain. I kind of became dependent on that person, that thing. And yeah, it was over and the text started flying and everything else, but I'm proud of myself. I'm proud of Mike. Like he said, like without him pushing, like once I got to the 12th, I didn't know if I was going to quit on the 13th or 14th, and we made it all the way to the 20th. I'm like the 20th, like it's crazy. It's crazy. And the fun part is to go into that uncharted waters. Cause man, I knew the 12th, I knew what the 12th felt like, but I didn't know what the 13th felt like. And I didn't know what the 14th felt like, and et cetera, et cetera. And I don't know if a lot of us have ever, you know, got a chance to go in the uncharted. I'm going to go in the uncharted waters again in May. The longest I've ever run in my life is 101 miles. So when I get to 102, 103, 150, it's going to be crazy scary, right? But it's how we grow, and it's an incredibly scary but fulfilling place to be. It's really weird. In fact, the person who gave me the inspiration to do Cocodona was Bart Lee, good friend, and a lot of people know him. He's one of the Iron Cowboys, good buddies too. I asked him, I paced him from mile 210 to 250 of Cocodona last year, and at 210, I'm just like, Bart, you're 210 miles, man. Why did you decide to do this? This is so nuts. He goes, we all have to do something that scares us. And my kids need to see me scared. They need to see that life just isn't handed to you. You got to go get it and put yourself in uncomfortable situations to give yourself those growth opportunities. And so like every day I was like, it was kind of scary because I was keeping track of my stats on Training Peaks, and my fitness was through the roof, but you know, it was really through the roof. My fatigue level, like I literally didn't know. Like I'm 51. Mike, what are you, 40? Like you're about 10 years younger than me.
Yep.
I didn't know if I dropped out of a heart attack. I had a blood clot last summer, like after Leadville. You didn't know. You had to kind of put it all on the line and say, it is what it is. And if something bad happens, it bad happens. But you can't live scared. You can't live in this cocoon of safety. You've kind of got to get into a scary spot, not an irresponsible spot. But a place that scares you. And honestly, once we got past January 12th, every day was kind of a new frontier. It was crazy, but crazy awesome. And I miss it already.
Well, thank you so much for kind of recapping that. I did want to read a little bit of your obituary back to you. So like you said, you were unaware that Mike had finished the day prior. And you said you had your phone on airplane mode during your last day on January 20th. And then you said this: as I finished the run and un-airplane moded my phone to upload the Garmin data, my texts blew up congratulating me on the sudden death December victory. Having already processed my own funeral, my own end, and having finished my last run on my own terms, I was emotionally unable to process it. Michael Greer is my champion. He ran me into the ground and broke me. He made me ring the bell, and it I did. This whole experience has been raw, difficult, and I'd like to say it's made me a better person. What it did to me was teach me, nay, remind me what's important in life. Family, faith, friends, and understanding our bigger purpose. I've always said this event isn't about finding out who the best runner is, because I'm certainly not that. It's about finding out who's willing to sacrifice the most. I was at several points willing to sacrifice everything that scares me. And I was at points willing to sacrifice everything, and that scares me. I'm so glad my wife helped me snap out of my trance last night. I'm so glad I have friends to help me see things from a different perspective and aren't afraid to tell me when my priorities are upside down. While I'm happy to get the SDD win, I honestly feel that Mike deserved it more than me. He maintained a full-time job, a family, ran all of his runs OG with incredible pace, and he's done it without forgetting who he is and while continuously serving others. He will always be the GOAT, and I'm honored to have had this chance to run with him and all the other TRIP runners. Just beautiful, just wonderful words of, you know, obviously congratulations to Mike, and just a beautiful, again, perspective on what this kind of event did for you, your learnings, your lessons. We've talked about your priorities and just wanting to be there for your kids, you know, recitals and activities and events without worrying about how it's going to affect your run the next day. And the thing
that precipitated all that kind of stuff, though, is one day my wife was telling me something, and she's like, well, just do it or whatever. And I'm like, but that's going to make me go to bed late, and then I'll lose this competition. And she says, screw the competition. I said, what did you say? And I got mad. I snapped, because you're kind of emotionally unstable after all those miles. Yeah. And I snapped, and I went to bed going, did I just snap at my wife because she's had the audacity to suggest I spend more time with my kids? Like, I got my priorities screwed up. And so that was a big wake up call for me, is when I snapped at my wife and she's like, are you serious right now? Like, I don't even know this person I'm talking to. And I'm just like, yeah, I thought about it for a while. I'm like, you're absolutely right. Like, it can take over your life. And that's one of the things I kind of alluded to in my thing of my buddy telling me I can't do it. Greer's going to win. I'm going to lose. Like, that little competitive monster, it's good to tap into it, you know, to get some energy and do stuff, but it started to grow inside me and it started to take over me. And it's like, I can't let that take over, because it almost did. And it was scary to look at yourself in the mirror and see that monster is consumed you and now taken over your whole life. And it's, you can't let that ever happen.
Yeah. Like you were kind of saying as well, like a fine line between being tough and competitive but trying not to be like irresponsible. Right. And that's really what, I preach kind of on this podcast, like called the Headlamp Hour. Like, we get our runs in when we can, and that's often entails having a headlamp on because it's in the dark. It's, you know, really a long time before work or after work and after family events and things like that. But I also want to make sure and make clear that, like, I'm not saying like neglect your family or neglect your work or neglect your other responsibilities. It's about balance. And while I kind of have trouble with that word too, because I don't think that all things can be in perfect balance all at the same time, but maybe, like, you know, prioritization and achieving balance in degrees or, you know, at certain times, maybe the scales are tipped one way or the other, and at other times they're tipped the other way. But I guess all that being said, that's kind of this whole like event and the sudden death December really was a crucible, I feel like, for what I've been trying to get at with this podcast. So I've just like super enjoyed this conversation. And when I heard about Mike doing it, and then you, Patrick, and others, it just really excited me. So again, thank you so much for this conversation. And the last question that I have for you that I ask all the podcast guests, and maybe we'll start with Mike and then finish up with you, Patrick, is what mantra or saying serves as your headlamp through the dark and difficult moments of life and or running? So Mike, do you want to start us out there?
So say that again. Sorry.
What mantra or saying serves as your headlamp? Do you have something that runs through your mind when you're going through dark or difficult moments? You know, whether it's with running or life.
Yeah, I mean, I just, yes and no. Okay. You know, I tell myself we're always at 50% capacity, and, you know, so when things are great, we can look at the glass as half empty and be ticked off, even though things are great. And when things are really tough and hard, we can look at the glass as half empty and be ticked off. or we can look at it as half full, you know, in both scenarios. And so going back to, again, where my head shifted back to leading up to Cocodona is really try to, I try to, you know, focus on things that I've been blessed with, and, you know, find that gratitude. And I think that can come, you know, when we're doing an ultra marathon, I think we tend to get stripped down physically, emotionally. And in those moments, I feel like it's a lot easier to really have that clear perspective where we really recognize the blessings we have and really recognize what's important. So try to remember 50% capacity and look at the glasses half full always. I think the mantra, you know, I tend to follow too, I'd say is keep running, keep eating, or keep running, keep moving, keep positive, is kind of my mantra, you know, like, and again, in running and in life, it's just half the battle is just moving, right? Like just that next step forward. But we also have to fuel, you know, we have to take in our fuel again in running and in life. Like we've got to get the food, we've got to get, you know, the electrolytes, you know, in life, we've got to have those connections. We've got to serve and be mindful of others, you know, to gain, you know, that the fuel that we need to move, keep moving, and then staying positive, man, like goes back to being, you know, the 50% rule. Like it is a mindset to be positive. And that's not to say we can't or shouldn't be sad at times and have sorrow and, you know, shed tears, because that's an important part of it. But we can still, even in those moments, I believe we can be positive. And so I think those are the two things I try to focus on.
Perfect. I love it. Optimism is very key in running and in life. All right, Patrick, how about you?
So yeah, just to piggyback on what Mike said, I don't believe anything in life is absolute. When you're having a tough time, you just got to know that it's a tough time, but you're going to swing back up. It's going to come back up. Your stock is going to come back up. Your business, your emotions are going to come back up. Your physical body is going to come back up. So even if you're in a dark spot now, man, an hour from now, you may feel like $1 million, but you just got to get to that next phase. Nothing is permanent. So life, running, it's interval training. It's always good. It's bad. It's good. So you just got to make sure that you know that that things will improve. And when you're on the downslope and you're having trouble coming out, like rely on your tribe, like surround yourself with people like Mike. Like whenever I run with him, man, my battery, my bucket, it's full. Like I feel more empowered, more just full, like of life, just by spending time with him. So surround yourself with people that do that for you. For me, in the sudden death December, that person was Scott Mumford. I remember, I think it was the 17th of January. The weather forecast was rain all day long, like big, not the green, the light green, like the dark green with yellow little bands, like that was coming over us. And I just called him and I said, Scott, I want to quit. I know I shouldn't quit. And I know that when I'm in a down spot, I need to talk to somebody. So can you just talk to me? He says, yeah, tell me what's up. And so we talked about it. He goes, well, if it's going to rain from 4 a.m. to 8 a.m., the exact time you need to be running, he goes, why don't you run from 12 o'clock to 4 o'clock and then just swap your sleep? And oh, your back's spasming. Like at the end, I could run, but my back was so seized up. I couldn't even wear my backpack anymore. He's like, all right, let's put that in a park. Let's do just a water bottle you can carry and just go 4 miles down, 4 miles back, and then fill all your water bottles up. And then he's like, don't put anything. So I just had that person. I could just have a soundboard that just, I knew I was down. I just had the recognition. I'm like, dude, I'm down. And tomorrow I'll probably feel better, but I just don't feel like doing it. I feel like quitting. And he picked me up every day. And then every day I woke up, I did feel better. And then I did what he said. And we worked out these problems together. And it was awesome. So whether that's like in your marriage or in your business or something, have that person that when you recognize, dude, I'm down, I know I'm going to be okay, but I need help to get out of this trough. And trail running is awesome because you have a crew, you have a pacer. The pacer's only job is to pick your ass up out of that trough and talk positive into you and get to the top of the hill and enjoy that downhill that you earned from that hard climb, because it never, nothing's ever permanent. In that same thing, like if you're having stomach flu and puking and stuff, dude, you're 30 minutes away from feeling a lot better. Like, that's not the end of you. And so I see a lot of people in trail running, they have an issue, and that means I'm done. It means you're temporarily disabled or temporarily having a problem. But give the process some time to work itself out so that problem will pass. Bring in help. And then, you know, like Mike says, say a little prayer, like involve God in it, like ask for help, like know when you be self-aware enough to know when you need to ask. Cause I think a lot of us never want to ask. We just want to just do it. But honestly, it's running's a team sport. Life is a team sport. And when the things get hard, like there's only so much you can do in training and preparation. And eventually at some point, maybe if you haven't been there yet, maybe you need to run a little longer race or whatever, but you're going to have a point where you have to build a crew around you and rely on them and trust them.
Wonderful. Awesome. Yeah. That makes me think of like the scripture, like this too shall pass, right? Like when you're feeling down in a race or
nothing's permanent. Don't quit.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for those words of wisdom. Again, I just have so much enjoyed this conversation and have been looking forward to it for a while after I saw what you guys were doing for Sudden Death December. I admire you two so much, and not just because of your, you know, incredible endurance and running but in life. And I know that there's a family, there's a team behind you guys that, your wives, your children, your friends and people that were all along the way to support you. And I just applaud them as well. So thanks again for this conversation. I really look forward to seeing you two toe the line at Cocodona 250 here in a little bit. And thanks again.
Thank you, Nate. It's been a pleasure.
You rock, mate. Thanks for having us, man.
Thanks.